I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the fascinating world of online adult education. As more and more career paths require revitalization and reinvention, education has stopped being an early-in-life experience. More and more adults find that lifelong learning is more than a cliche. It is a necessity, and they are going online to find the training and classes they need. We'll talk about this brave new world with a great group of guests. Allison Barber, WGU, Indiana Chancellor, Kathy Lee, Ivy Tech, Indianapolis Chancellor, and Gina Del Santo, Indiana Commission for Higher Education Chief of Staff. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, Executive Editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the topic of online adult education. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm joined today by a fabulous group of guests, starting with Allison Barber, who is the Chancellor of WGU, Indiana. Allison, welcome to the program.
Hello, thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. Kathy Lee, who is the Chancellor for Ivy Tech Central Indiana. I got that wrong in the billboard. I'm glad we can correct it now. Welcome to the program, Kathy.
Thanks, John. It's delightful to be here.
It's good to have you here. And Gina Del Santo, who is the Chief of Staff for the Indiana Commission for Higher Education. Gina, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, John. Thanks for inviting us.
Oh, certainly. Well, I want to start a little bit with, online education. Is there a definition that we use for this, something that can give the audience a starting point on the conversation? I see Gina nodding her head at me and the others avoiding eye contact, so we'll start with Gina.
Right. John, online education is actually defined by the accrediting commission that accredits all of the institutions of higher education in Indiana. And what they prescribe essentially is if 51% of the content of a given course is delivered online as opposed to in a site-based program, it's considered online education.
And how much, how big a business has this become? I'll go to Allison Barber on this.
Well,
one.
WGU Indiana, our entire curriculum is online because
that's
we're built for the.
Yeah. Yeah,
thank you, John. Nicely done. Our university is for busy and working adults, and so online is the option for them. But if you look across the country, this is the trend of universities. So now 75% of the universities, traditional universities in America, offer some type of online education. And we see that because technology is really advanced in this space, that universities across the country are leveraging technology to offer access to education in a new and important way for busy people.
Okay. Kathy Lee, I will just so we all get started in the conversation here and everybody gets warmed up, what are the virtues of online education?
Oh, well, that's thanks for an easy one. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Based on what Allison said, the fact that this is a really growing market and everybody's getting into it, when you have what is a traditional school, one would think like Ivy Tech, we find that we hit all levels of the spectrum. And so the virtues, one of them is access. It makes it so much easier for our adult students to figure out how they want to go to school. They can come to campus. They can go face-to-face. They can take a course that's 50-50. 50% online, 50% face-to-face, so they can warm up to it. And then many just dive right into the online or distance education model where they're doing it all on their computer and interacting with their fellow classmates and instructor that way. And everybody that way has the ability to find best fit for them, what would work with their schedule, their life, and their learning style.
Now, I heard Allison say that 75% of the universities, colleges and universities, in the country now,
yes,
I presume,
that's right,
are offering online courses or educational opportunities of some kind. Do we have any idea how many people, how many Americans are are getting their training that
way.
Yeah,
I think the last statistic I saw, 6 million people are enrolled in some type of online course. So that's a pretty broad. Now we have MIT and Harvard and Udacity universities that are only offering these, what you might know of as MOOCs, massive open online courses. So now there are people worldwide.
I hate acronyms.
I know. That's why at least I spelled it out for you, right?
Thank you.
So you've got, actually, we now have, it's a global, there's a global emphasis now that people want access to higher education. And why is that, John? Because education leads to better jobs, better opportunities, and it gives you the opportunity to take care of your family. So now we see worldwide people enrolling in these online courses, not just here in the States.
We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Gina Del Santo, I'll come back to you on this. Why has this exploded in the fashion? Because obviously there couldn't have been online education up to, 20 years ago. To go from zero to 6 million in that period of time is pretty phenomenal growth. What accounts for that? And what were the challenges in making sure that, in getting a system set up that was feasible?
Yeah, there's, I think, been a ratcheting up, actually, and the ratcheting involves interest and the need that Kathy mentioned for adults that work a day job. They really can't be on campus during the day. Sometimes they can't be on campus during the evening as well. So having an online option gives them the flexibility to do their coursework, whether it's over their lunch break or whether it is at home after the kids have gone to bed. So that need for flexibility has been part of the ratcheting. The other part of the ratcheting is what you mentioned, technological advances. It's become far easier and far more pervasive within society for folks to have home computers or tablets, whatever they need to get online. So as more people have those opportunities and need those opportunities, universities have responded.
Well, and Alice and Barbara, I'll come back to you. And really, in terms of establishing an online university and an online academic experience, what are the challenges in getting something like that started?
Well, when WGU started, it was actually 15 years ago, the same year that Yahoo launched. And so going off of what Gina was just talking about, when you start an online university, mm-hmm. before we even knew as a society what online meant was a challenge. And then getting that, our university accredited across the country in every state. And that's important for listeners as they pursue college, and I hope they do, to make sure that they're going to accredited programs, because that's a measurement mm-hmm. of quality education. And so for us, really, it was about figuring out who we could best help with online education. And as Gina was saying, the flexibility. We just had a graduate who is a single parent, and she would go to school at 4 in the morning so that she could work and take care of her son. That's only possible in an online environment. And so it's the flexibility and the affordability, but figuring out who are particular niches that we can help through online education, which we find to be the working adult, average age 37. So some of the challenges was really to figure out how to create a curriculum that would be accredited, and then how to distribute it and advance the mission of online education to the right audience who can benefit from it.
And I think you said real quickly your average age is
37.
37, so it's definitely a very non-traditional student.
Sure, 70% of our students work full-time.
Okay, 70%. And are these folks who already have college degrees earlier in life are going back for retraining, or are they folks who are going after the college degree later in life after pursuing?
My students transfer in credits. They have some college and no degree when they're going for their bachelor's degree. And if they're going for their master's, of course, they have a bachelor's. But that speaks really to our strong partnership with Ivy Tech. A lot of our students come from Ivy Tech, and they get that associate's degree and then move right into WGU Indiana to go further to get their bachelor's.
Well, and I thank you for the segue, because I was going to go to Kathy on this. You had a slightly, Ivy Tech obviously has been around for a long, long time and had to make a decision, rather than going from a standing start to going online, to incorporating online education into what you already do. What were the challenges involved in doing that?
Well, there were a few. I mean, obviously Ivy Tech is a statewide institution and we have campuses all over the place, but we do have a challenge reaching our students where they are both physically and in their work lives. Much like Allison's students, our average age is right around 27, and the vast majority of our students work at least part-time. So we see a big mix of students taking a couple of face-to-face classes and then filling out their schedule with online classes. And so for us, it was helping our current students at the time and our faculty move into the world of online education and realizing that it was as rich an experience as the traditional face-to-face classroom. And we still have some folks that prefer face-to-face, but we know that going on, as Allison said, many of our students do transfer to WGU and to other places around the state, that their options will be greater if they're literate in the online education modalities and that they know how to use it. But we also face a challenge around the state with areas of the state that don't have strong online access. Mm-hmm. And so how, as institutions, do we help them do that? And for Ivy Tech, it's, well, we can come to campus and use resources on the campus to still do your online courses. So we've had a variety of challenges in those areas, but it's been a good thing to be part of. And just for the record, Ivy Tech is getting ready to celebrate its 50th anniversary next year.
Congratulations. We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. Your question, please.
This is just a very broad question or comment, but I'm concerned with the direction of education is strictly marketing itself as a way to get a job, and I'd really like to see a continuation of educating citizens and educating people to be, that education isn't mostly about your marketability, but you're educating us to be better citizens, and I'd like to hear more about that.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Thomas.
Thank you.
Certainly. Well, that's sort of the classic Jeffersonian argument, that originally we invested in a public education system as a preparation for the responsibilities of citizenship. As the probably best positioned to answer that, I'll toss this one to Gina Del Santo.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Sure.
You know, a couple of things. First, we often hear the argument about the vocationalization of post-secondary study. And I think there are a number of concepts embedded within post-secondary study that are going to really prevent that from ever taking full hold. And let me tell you what I mean by that. If you're pursuing a degree, whether that's a baccalaureate degree or an associate's degree, within that curriculum, within those credits that you must complete, is something called the general education curriculum. It comprises humanities, social sciences, natural sciences. In other words, the things that we refer to as different ways of knowing. The way of knowing within the sciences is very different from the way of knowing in the humanities or the fine arts. And because students must complete that general education core in order to get a degree, they are naturally exposed to the liberal arts and to these different ways of knowing. That's what helps to create a well-rounded mind and to help people learn how to examine situations, examine problems in very creative ways, looking at it from a multidimensional approach.
Well, and I guess the other part of that question, and keep in mind, I work at a very traditional institution in that regard. The other argument you will hear about this is that the college experience is not just about what you learn in the classroom. It's about the social experiences and all of that. And that's harder to replicate in an online experience. Is there something to that, Allison?
Well, I think it's important. I agree with what Gina has said and your point, too, about the traditional student going to college and the value of that campus experience. But I think if you look at the students that Kathy and I are trying to help, mm-hmm. if one of my recent graduates is 55 years old. She doesn't need a campus. She doesn't need a football team. She doesn't need a sorority. She needs a master's degree so she can get promoted in her job at the hospital and move on and be able to provide for her family. And so I think it's really important that we unpack the difference in the students that we're talking about. And our students typically are looking, they're older, they have great experience in jobs and in life, and they can bring that to their education online and make a robust approach at their academic pursuit. And importantly, they'll be eligible for the jobs and promotions that they're looking for.
Very quickly, then, the presumption is that we're looking at an entirely different type of student to some degree, and it's probably an underserved population. From before, I see two people nodding their heads. Silence doesn't work so well on radio, so
well, I would just jump in. Yes. At WGU Indiana, absolutely. We have students in all 92 counties, and some of them in average age 37. So the rural outreach and the statewide outreach is a very different audience.
We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. My guests are Allison Barber with WGU Indiana, Kathy Lee of Ivy Tech Central Indiana, and Gina Del Santo with the Indiana Commission for Higher Education. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about online adult education. My guests are Allison Barber with WGU Indiana, Kathy Lee, who is with Ivy Tech Central Indiana, and Gina Del Santo, who is with the Indiana Commission for Higher Education. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've been talking and seen many of the reasons that students pursue online educational opportunities, and we've figured out that they tend to be a little bit older than the traditional student. They have some work, probably family, other obligations. So the convenience of being able to do this online and in some ways set your own schedule for learning is part of it. Is there also a presumption that it's less expensive to do things online? I'll throw that one to Kathy Lee.
I don't know if we hear so much about that it's less expensive, but a lot of folks think it's a lot easier. I think they have in mind that it's the old correspondence. All I have to do is read something and then answer a few questions and I move on. And today's online courses aren't like that at all. They're extremely interactive, not only with the instructors, but with your fellow classmates. The difference between synchronized and asynchronous learning that takes place.
Probably ought to define what that is for those folks out there who are not.
And Allison might have to help bail me out here. But the idea that sometimes when you're online with your class, there may be times where everybody in your class is online with you. And so you're actually having a written discussion back and forth and potentially even Skyping or doing other video work where you see your classmates and or your instructor. And then there are other times where it is 4 o'clock in the morning and you're sitting there working through your assignments and doing the things that you need to do. So it offers a variety of learning, again, speaking to a lot of folks' styles. Cheaper, I haven't actually heard anybody think that it would be less expensive, unless you want to figure in gas and driving back and forth to campus, then the answer would be absolutely
yes. So the course is the same regardless of whether you take it online or cost. We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Katie, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Your question, please.
I do have a question. I was watching CNBC last night about cheating and how cultures, kind of in our culture, there's been this epidemic of cheating. And so I was wondering if maybe your panelists could comment on sort of how they handle that in the online environment versus the classroom. And, you know, recently with the whole Lance Armstrong and, that coming out, I'm just wondering how their culture and how they sort of handle that.
Good question. Thanks very much for the call, Katie.
Thanks.
Well, I'll throw that one to Allison Barber. The verification system.
Sure.
Although I would argue as a classroom teacher myself, it's not always easy to catch someone even when you're standing there in the room. But
Sure.
Please.
Sure. Most online universities, I know WGU Indiana, we put a lot of things in place to help encourage honesty and to include every one of our students receive a webcam. And so you take your test from home with a webcam, but that's monitored by a third-party contractor who watches the folks take their test. And so you're in the room in your home taking your exam with our webcam, and we can see that happening. And so that prevents, that's one level of just integrity enforcement. And then we also have all of our systems have there's technology that when you submit a paper that it can go through a system and look for plagiarism.
Mm-hmm.
But I just always want to underscore that integrity is an individual issue. And so mm-hmm. I was a classroom teacher too. And anytime you sent home an assignment mm-hmm. with a student to do, as you were alluding to, John, mm-hmm. really integrity comes down to that person. Because if you write a paper at home, you don't really know who wrote that paper, right, when that student's at home. And so for us, we put in everything that we can to really encourage people to do the right thing. So it's using technology, using webcams that we provide to students, and then just really putting an emphasis on this is your work and mm-hmm. it's your integrity on the line. And so we encourage that throughout our university, like we all do.
You're getting what you're paying for if you're not doing the work yourself.
That's right. But there's really no full 100% safeguard against any type of education experience except for individual integrity.
Well, and we've identified, Kathy, I think, was mentioning the fact that you know, people viewed online education as sort of the equivalent of the old correspondence courses where you'd read something and answer a couple of questions and then, boom, you were off, and they weren't highly regarded. What were some of the obstacles in getting people to feel comfortable with online adult education? I'll throw that one to Gina Del Santo, but I'll let everyone take a crack at it.
Yeah, thanks, John. One of the things that I talk about fairly frequently and in working with our institutions is helping adult students to get over the technology gap. This may be the very first time that they've used technology beyond surfing the internet and doing email. And this requires a bit more technological savvy, using spreadsheets, using Word documents, and even looking at PowerPoints and a variety of other chat functions. So to the degree to which higher education institutions can help adults get over those hurdles in using the technology, the better off their students will be, and I think the better off the classroom experience will be for both the instructor, the other students, and the primary student.
Well, and Kathy Lee, I presume we've alluded to the fact that Ivy Tech was here for a long time before online adult education became part of the Ivy Tech experience. What were some of the challenges, both as an institution saying, we're going to embrace this, we're going to do it, and then also getting people to take it seriously?
Well, I think one of the challenges from the institution's perspective, John, was that we needed to be sure that the students understood the equipment that they needed to have at home in order to do this. You can't do this on a 30-year-old computer mm-hmm. or on a modem that's going to take forever to upload or download your information. So it was helping the students realize what they need, and then helping them to understand, too, if they're prepared to be online learners. And in fact, if you go to our website, you can find under www.ivytech.edu what they call a READY assessment. And it's a nationwide assessment. You'll find it in a variety of places. But it's a little self-quiz that you can take just to find out if you're going to be successful in online. So it was, for us, it was figuring out those kinds of tools to give to our students and to our faculty to make sure that they were ready to go. And then there was the getting the faculty ready. If I, too, am a classroom teacher, and if you get used to teaching face-to-face for years and years, and all of a sudden somebody tells you you can sit home in your pajamas and teach your class, it's a different mindset. And if you're used to touching your students every day, figuring out how you're going to touch them electronically. So we had to do a lot of professional development with our faculty to show them the tools that were available to them and to help them to think through that process.
Gina Del Santo.
Yeah, in addition to the technological proficiencies and the computer equipment that's necessary, I think it's important not to overlook another dimension, and that is the support for the adult student. Mm-hmm. Do they have the opportunity to talk to an academic advisor, to engage their faculty member in what other kinds of things they should be doing in terms of internships, job shadowing experiences, any difficulties they're experiencing, the need for tutors and the like. And what I can say is that WGU has a thoroughly impressive model that it has in place, and I think it's something that I think the listeners would be very interested in hearing about.
Yeah, that is a part that we haven't talked about, really, is the part outside the classroom as well. I mean, there is advising, there is the career counseling piece of it, especially since these experiences are supposed to be career-focused. So, Allison Barber, real quickly, how do you meet those challenges?
Sure. Well, I would mention Mary Carney, 50 years old, and wanted to get her college degree before her kids went to college. And she hadn't been in college since she was in her 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And because of our model, she selected WGU Indiana because it's affordable at $6,000 a year. But more importantly for her, every student is partnered with a faculty member. And that mentor calls the student every week. So every week, Mary had a phone call from her faculty member calling her, helping her figure out technology, work through the curriculum, and to keep on track in her pursuit for this degree. And so Mary received her bachelor's and now just received her master's degree. But it was really what Gina highlighted is that one-on-one relationship that we have at WGU Indiana with all of our students to help them attain their degree.
Kathy Lee.
And if I can just to add on to what Allison just said, I have a good friend who was thinking about going back to school to pursue a nursing degree. And she's an adult. She already has several degrees, so she's pretty college savvy. But I suggested she talk to WGU, and she did. She made that call. And so every night when I would check in to see how her progress was going, she was telling me about, well, my advisor at WGU said, I need to do this, and I need to look at this. And it just helped, even though she already knew how to navigate the system, that one-on-one relationship is so important, I think, for any online service. The students still have to have that touch point. They still have to have that place to go to. And I know at Ivy Tech, we find that our online students still have to be able to access tutors and folks that will help them explain the system, and even not to go back to the technology again, but to troubleshoot their technology when that web thing won't download.
Well, and I guess that's a point I'd like to talk about a little bit. If it's online, obviously there is pressure to stay current with technology, and as someone who has to blow a hole in his budget every 3 or 4 years to upgrade technology to run a journalism school, I know what kind of a headache that can be. How difficult a challenge is that for, I'll start with Allison Barber on that one. How difficult is it just staying ahead of the technology?
Well, it is difficult, but it's really exciting because the new technology is not cumbersome. And so all of the advancements in technology make it easier and more affordable. And so we kind of embrace this new move with all of the personal devices and the notebooks and the laptops and the smartphones. It just means that we have to be smart, too, and we have to adapt all of our online education opportunities to the new device. So it does take time and it takes some money, but it's so much better for the student that it's worth every penny.
We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we were talking about this off the air a little bit before the show started. But one of the questions that I'm sure people would have out there is, do employers take online degrees seriously? As seriously as they do more traditional degrees. I'll throw that one to Gina Del Santo first and then let everybody have a crack at it.
The short answer is yes, absolutely. Employers recognize that when an adult is willing to give up a good portion of their personal time to balance the work, education, and life commitments, that's somebody that really has good time management skills, has good organizational abilities, and has a certain tenacity to succeed in life. And I think that's exactly the kind of employee that employers are looking for.
Kathy Lee, Has that been your experience, that employers are willing to take the degrees as seriously?
It has been. When we talk to our employers, what they tell us they're looking for are certain competencies. And if the student can prove and demonstrate the competencies, I think a lot of the employers are not so concerned where or how they gained them, but that they have them. And so the online education model makes it in some ways easier to document the competencies that the students are attaining or going after.
Okay. Allison Barber, I'm assuming this is a question you've had to deal with before.
Sure. And we research a lot of the issues nonstop. But I just came across some research by Zogby Research, and they interviewed 1,500 CEOs. 83% of these CEOs said absolutely they would hire an employee who went to an online university. And that is really exciting to see. That's a move in the right direction as far as we're concerned, because the competencies that people are learning in online education are just as valuable as in a brick-and-mortar opportunity. And so we're glad to see that employers are starting to value, in big ways, value the education from an online university.
We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Your question, please.
Actually, not a question. Just wanted to chime in on WGU. Over the course of the past year and a half, I decided I was going to go back to school, looked into a number of schools, both brick and mortar and online. Mm-hmm. Online worked much better for my situation. And
why was that?
I'm a single mom. I have two kids, both school age. On top of that, I work. So to try and work a work schedule and my kids' schedule around a brick and mortar college was going to be quite the feat. But the fact that WGU is accredited, it had the program that I wanted. And the thing that I love, not only do they have fabulous support, my mentor is great, the course mentors are great because I haven't started my first term there, but what I really liked about it is it's competency-based, which I haven't found any other university, certainly not a state or accredited university, that is. And the competency-based piece meant that I could use my existing knowledge and accelerate some of my classes because I can test, see where I fall in it, or, you know, if I test high enough in my pretest, I can go straight to my objective test. So it is a wonderful opportunity for adults.
Thank you very much for the call, Kathy, and thanks for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Allison, that probably makes you feel pretty good
sure.
to hear that kind of testimonial. Could you talk a little bit about what you meant by the competency-based system, how that works?
Sure, and congratulations, Kathy. Welcome to our school. We know at higher ed that adults come to education knowing different things and learning at different rates. And so our model at WGU Indiana is really to accelerate education for adults. There's no reason if you've been in banking for 10 years that you should sit through a class on project management if you've been doing it at the bank for the last 10 years. And so we allow you to test out of what you know. You have to prove you're competent. You have to, you know, get a B, and so at least a B. And so you have to prove that you're competent. But the last thing we want to do is waste your time or your money. And I think it's, you know, it's offensive to adults to make them sit and just listen to the things that they've already done in their life that they are competent in. And we find that this model works for people just like Kathy that says, let me test out of what I know and accelerate to my degree.
So that means, in effect, you could come in as a first year student. And if you can demonstrate competency in all of these areas, you can start as the equivalent of a junior.
Sure. Our average student graduates with a bachelor's in 2.5 years and a master's in 2 years.
Wow. Well, that is a different kind of take on the educational system. Then how many classes would that involve a person taking?
Well,
is there a minimum number for WGU that people have to take? Or,
nope.
You know, in theory, if they come in and they can demonstrate
it's a full degree, right? That's
done.
Right. That's right. Exactly right. It's you move through the typical credit hour type of model, but it's, you know, typically, you take 12 credits or competency units per 6 months,
okay.
And you move through your degree as quickly as you can. It works great for adults.
We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Real quickly, Allison Barber, since we've gotten this call, where should people go to apply for admission to WGU?
Indiana.wgu.edu. We welcome the call.
Certainly. We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. My guests are Allison Barber, Kathy Lee, and Gina Del Santo. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about online adult education. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Allison Barber, who is the chancellor of WGU Indiana, Kathy Lee, who is the chancellor of Ivy Tech Central Indiana, and Gina Del Santo, who is chief of staff for the Indiana Commission for Higher Education. I've got an email question from a listener by the name of Chuck, who says, earlier you asked the panel about the things that drove the interest in online education. They responded with what I feel is only half the answer. Yes, there is a tremendous response need for online learning. The other half of it is that it is much cheaper for the schools to do learning via this model. They don't need to buy land and build buildings to have a school. WGU should know this very well. I would like to hear their thoughts on this. As a corollary to this, as an adjunct professor, I am curious about the panel's thoughts on the extra time it takes the instructor to teach an online course as opposed to a face-to-face course. Much of the extra time is because the students aren't all there at the same time, so the instructor needs to accommodate that needed flexibility. At Ivy Tech, the instructors are paid the same, whether it is online or face-to-face. Well, since you were invoked there, Kathy Lee, I'll throw that one to you first.
Well, he is correct. We do currently pay our adjuncts the same, whether it is online or face-to-face. And that's something that we've been exploring as to, how much additional time are they putting in online? Because a good online instructor does go above and beyond with their contact and reaching out to their students. And he also makes another valid point that as we at Ivy Tech attempt to reach out and serve the population in Central Indiana and around the state, it's not possible for us to put up physical buildings in every town and county around, although we cover most of the counties, but all over the state. And it is a better way to use the taxpayers' money to make education available to the citizens of Indiana. And for us at Ivy Tech, it means having a balance of both. Of course, WGU has a slightly different pattern to that, but I do think he makes a valid point there.
Allison Barber, I'll give you a crack at that one, too.
Well, remember that WGU Indiana was only created as an online university for busy adults, right? So we're not moving into something from being a traditional brick and mortar. This is what we were built to do. Mm-hmm. And so for us, tuition $6,000 a year, and we're a nonprofit, and we don't take money from the state. So our model is a very unique model, which makes us very affordable. All of our professors are full-time. We don't have adjuncts because, as we mentioned, our students are working full-time. And so we need our faculty members available at late night hours and weekends. And so that's a little bit of a different type of approach. That seems to work really well for our students.
Is it hard for you to find people who are willing to be available?
You know, John, it isn't. We have really attracted wonderful. We've hired over 150 people here in Indiana in 2.5 years because there are a lot of people who have been in education but have missed the practicality of working one-on-one with students, which is our model. And so it really attracts a terrific group of individuals that like this model.
Well, and I know a lot of the education funders, the foundations now, say that their focus is on trying to connect centers of excellence. Mm-hmm. It seems to be with this model that in some ways it speaks to where they're trying to go there by saying, okay, you can have a superb economics department in California and a great journalism program here in Indiana, for example. and, you know, the student then can access it from anywhere, regardless of location. Is that one of the appeals of online education, or is that a trend that we're beginning to see, Gina Del Santo?
Yes, it is, John. In fact, at the Commission for Higher Education, we've been very happy to see what Indiana University is doing in this space with its regional campuses. And President Grabe of Indiana University has indicated that all of the regional campuses, IU Kokomo, IU East, and the like, are now going to be full partners in their online program. So that if the competency among the faculty exists at IU East, it will be IU East delivering the course in economics to all students who would be attending all of the regional campuses statewide. And that's a tremendous savings of resources. Plus, it puts the premier faculty in any given discipline at the forefront, whereas, you know, a professorate in one discipline at IU Kokomo might not be as strong as another in another part of the state. Students can access those top-tier faculty uniformly. And we also think that's probably the benefit of these MOOCs, these massive open online courses. These MOOCs really do allow for students to take the online class with premier faculty. But then the faculty at the campuses, the on-site campuses, might act as support to that big size lecture. And so this also has the opportunity to change the model within higher education very dramatically as well.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Krista, and it's a good one. It reverses some of what we've been talking about, because we spent a lot of time talking about where online education, what sort of people it works for. She says, what kind of student is not a good fit for online education? Kathy Lee.
Well, she makes a good point, and we know that there are some not. And it does come back a little bit to the folks who are maybe venturing into the educational system for the first time. They're not real comfortable yet with the technology, and they want the comfort of sitting in a classroom with an instructor there working around the classroom. I was going to say in front of the classroom, but very few of our instructors stay in front of the classroom anymore. It's much more interactive. But they want the experience of driving to a physical facility. And while at Ivy Tech we don't have a marching band or a football team, we do have the student union feel and a place where they can sit in a classroom and meet other folks and have that face-to-face networking capability. But we often see that folks that start out with that mindset start to venture into the online world, because all of our classes, even our face-to-face classes, have an online component to them. It's so important for students to understand and be able to use the technology that's available to them. I also think that some of our students, and we do have our share of right out of high school 18 to 24-year-olds, are coming to Ivy Tech for a variety of reasons, affordability being a prime one, but they want some of that college experience. Mm-hmm. And even though they're not going to get to be in a traditional four-year residential facility, they still want to hang out with classmates, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And have that exchange with classmates outside of the classroom experience. Mm-hmm. I'll throw that one to Allison Barber, too. Who is what students would not be a good fit for WGU, would you say?
Well, I think what Kathy is saying is exactly right. And so the important thing, John, is really, and I hope the listeners really sense this collaboration that we have here around the table today, is that both Ivy Tech and WGU Indiana and most of our universities have a self-assessment. Mm-hmm. The last thing we want to do in the space of higher ed is to waste someone's time or to take their money, right? Mm-hmm. So we encourage every listener to go online and take the self-assessment. WGU, you can take your first little class without even paying for it to see if you're a good fit. So it's really important. If you have to commit 15 to 20 hours a week to do online education, you have to be committed to that pursuit. But most importantly, you should take the self-evaluation, because we want you to find a good fit. Wow, we're so fortunate in Indiana. So many great universities, a variety of options for people. But the most important thing we can really underscore today is that college completion does count. And it counts for every Hoosier who wants to be successful and take care of their family and have advancement. And the research is just keeps proving it over and over again. And so there are a lot of models for people. If online's not the right fit for you, then find a different fit. But it matters.
Well,
to complete.
We've got a lot of calls lined up, and I want to get to them. But Krista has asked a provocative question here that I want to take seriously. I know that every year the New York Times does a story saying that some daunting number of students who are getting ready to enter college are not prepared for it at all. Generally, it's somewhere around 75%, they say, are not prepared to engage. Is online, I mean, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that for people to succeed in doing online education, there has to be a fair amount of personal discipline, and they have to be self-starters.
Yes.
If these students have coming into that educational experience have not had success at a lower level, are they likely to have success online?
It's a great point. We find at WGU Indiana, the successful student has already had college experience before they move into the online space. And so that is a very good indicator of their success in online previous college.
We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Shay, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Your question, please.
Hello.
Your question, please.
Well, I've been attending, I was for the last year, taking classes both on campus and online. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've been really frustrated with, especially this last semester, is the participation of my classmates in the online forums. And I just wanted to know what your panelists thought about how to get people more involved. I mean, besides posting every 2 or 3 days, there's not a whole lot of actual interaction, you know, like learning, feeding off of one another.
Thank you very much for the question, Shay. Take care. Well, and that's a variation of the, you know, the question about basically what kind of experience is this? You know, is it online? It is much better an experience between teacher and student. It's the larger college experience. Are there ways for students to interact and to connect with each other through an online experience, Allison Barber?
At WGU Indiana, we do have online communities, and then we also have student meetups around the state where students get together with faculty members. But the online community is really the space where that conversation and support happens between students.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Heather. It says, how old can previous credits be to transfer from a university to WGU?
Heather, we've had students transferring credits from 10 and 15 years back, and so really you need to go to the website, call an enrollment counselor, and see what you have and what will transfer.
We are talking about online adult education. You can join the conversation by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. Question, please.
All right. Is it possible for an adult student with ADD to take advantage of the online education?
Good question. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. I'll throw that one first to Kathy Lee, since she was nodding her head.
Elizabeth, I would definitely say yes. Again, it just goes back to hooking into the college and talking to the online advisors to help you set up the kind of classes that you need and make sure that you're using the technology the right way. But yeah, it's up to you to move that forward, and I would encourage you to give it a shot.
Is it easier? I mean, we talk about ADD. If there are other non-traditional students who you know, deal with learning disabilities, mm-hmm. does this give them different options? Can you calibrate the way you deliver the curriculum to serve their needs? Allison Barber.
We do have ADA accommodations at WGU Indiana, and so we find this space, one space in particular, is with our wounded veterans that we work a lot with as well. So, yes, we do have accommodations across the board.
We are talking about online adult education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, great. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. Certainly. Your question.
I have actually 2 degrees. I have a bachelor's in English and a Juris Doctorate at practice law for about 20 years. So I'm not interested in getting another degree, But what I've been looking into applying to vet school recently, and there are some advanced science and math classes like calculus that are required that I just have never taken. And I was wondering if that would be possible to take those kind of classes with either one of these universities, since I'm not looking for a degree.
Good question, Chris. Thank you very much for the call. Well, I'll throw that to whoever would like that. Kathy Lee?
I will start. Chris, I would encourage you to explore. Now, at Ivy Tech, folks often think that, you can't do science online. But you can do science online, because the kit that you need to practice the chemistry or the anatomy and physiology or whatever can actually be sent to you. And so it's amazing, along with the virtual world, the courses that are available. Now, it could be that because you're looking at an advanced degree there, and Ivy Tech offers what would be the equivalent of freshman and sophomore classes, that you might need to swing to the WGU world for some more advanced classes. But you will find both math and science available to you online.
Well, and is it? I'll throw this one to Gina Del Santo. I mean, it sounds like there's a possibility here, if you can transfer things over, to do a kind of, in the worst possible sense, degree stacking, where it gets easier. You can say all of the stuff that you've taken counts, so you only need to take two or three extra courses, and you can add another major to the degree you had. But in another sense, it also makes mid-career pivots a lot easier, because you don't have to start from scratch. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. Most colleges are going to accept, I talked about earlier, that this general education curriculum. Most colleges will accept the fact that you already did that gen ed curriculum for a previous baccalaureate or associate's degree. So that's 30 to 36 credit hours that you would not need to repeat. There is great transferability of credits that have been earned. Some do have time limits, 15 years or so. But the other thing that Allison mentioned earlier is this whole idea of demonstrating competency. And this realm has an official title. It's called prior learning credit. And prior learning credit is awarded by an institution who sees a student who is willing to complete a portfolio demonstrating the competencies, the work that they've done within their professional life. And if that work meets a certain level of criteria, then the institution is going to be willing to issue prior learning credit to that student. So the combination of prior academic experience, transfer credit, and prior learning assessments means that students less and less have to repeat courses and have to re-demonstrate competency in areas that they've already mastered.
I am afraid that's going to have to be the last word. This has been a fascinating conversation. I'd like to thank all of you for joining me today. Allison Barber, it has been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for spending this time with us. Kathy Lee, thank you very much for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
And Gina Del Santo, it has been a pleasure.
Thank you,
talking
John.
With you. We are going, and I also would like to thank all of our listeners who called in, sent questions. I'm sorry we could not get to all of them. I promise we will talk about this subject again. I'd like to invite everybody to come back next week, when we are going to be talking about the folks who serve on the front line, really, of medicine and healthcare, nurses, and often don't get the attention that they deserve. That show, obviously, will be next week. We will look forward to hearing from you until then. As for now, I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.